Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels as always, and today we're going to be talking about creating a practice and a life that you love, and I'm joined by none other than Kurik Ashley, whose work I have followed now for, oh, goodness knows how many years, and you can find his work at kurikashley.com. There's a heap of resources there, a wonderful vlog, heaps of other things, and I'm delighted that he's joining us from the Sunshine Coast. Kurik, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. How are you, mate?
I'm awesome. I'm honored that that you asked, and yeah, I mean, if people hear my accent, they'll realize I'm not really from the Sunshine Coast. I'm from East Brisbane.
Well, that East Brisbane accent is very, very distinctive, Kurik, and you're right, you sound like a native East Brisbane person. Interestingly, Chicago. I went to school in East Brisbane, Chicago. So there we go. You do sound familiar.
No, I'm from Chicago, and they're in minus 49 degrees centigrade right now, so you wonder why I live on the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, minus 49 degrees. I don't even know if I could really comprehend minus 49 degrees centigrade, to be honest with you. Have you been through that kind of temperature before?
Oh, yeah, and not only that, the wind chill factor will get down to like minus 80, and it's something you have to deal with in Chicago. So I've actually seen waves frozen in the curl on Lake Michigan.
Wow.
And you think that's impossible until you see it, and you're like, that's crazy. But the temperature can drop so dramatically, and right now they're having what's called an Arctic vortex. But they've even had a vortex where cold air from space came directly down. I'm like, it's like a bad movie.
It certainly does sound like it. And I'm just curious to ask you, Kurik, because given you've mentioned that you come from Chicago and you found yourself at the Sunshine Coast, my experience is that life is never linear. And I'm assuming that your path hasn't been entirely linear either. So I'm curious to understand, how did you find your way into the work that you do, which is helping business owners and entrepreneurs create an abundant life? How do you get into that?
Well, it's a great question because it took me a lot of years to kind of figure it out myself. And what I mean by that is I kind of always did it in high school, not about people business, but really about people achieving goals and making your life better and that there's got to be a plan. But at 12 years old, I became a professional actor, got on stage at Second City in Chicago. Then by 18 years old, moved to LA and started doing movies and worked on 38 movies and TV shows and worked on over 500 shows behind the camera. Then I was involved in a helicopter crash on a Chuck Norris film where five of my friends died. My best friend was 29 when he died in my arms. You know, so went down a dark path, depression and drugs and suicide and the rest of those things, but had always kind of been into the personal development, which I think saved me in its own weird ways. It kind of reignited my flame and turned me on. And then one day I was doing a seminar in a speaking engagement. I was still an actor, but I was doing one in Georgia, and I was supposed to hear about a movie that I was up for by Tuesday, but I left on Thursday and then checked my answering machine in those days on Sunday, only to find out that I got the job and they wanted me on the set on Friday, but I had already left on Thursday and didn't check my answering machine till. And so anyways, the first phone call was, congratulations, you got a job. And then like the 40th phone call from my agent was, you scumbag, you'll never work again. And, you know, no, I didn't even accept a job. Just because you get cast doesn't mean you have to take it.
Yeah.
But at that moment, the stress levels I felt and those things, and I thought about which one would I rather do? The speaking engagement and help all these kids in this community in Georgia, or this stupid movie, you know, that's not going to change my life. It's just a paycheck. And I thought what I did. You know, and so I thought, why would you ever want to become an actor? And then that's when it came to me, is that I thought if I got famous, people would want to hear me speak and teach what I have to teach. But unfortunately, I played bad guy, so nobody really wanted to hear me speak. So anyways, that's when I just decided to let go of the movie industry and just go straight towards what I wanted to do. And my career went through the roof because I wasn't distracted anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment around distractions. And I want to come back to the backstory in a minute because there's a rich tapestry of life there to tune into. But just on the topic of distractions, in the work that you do in the business realm and others, is distraction a key thing that you see coming up regularly? Are people generally distracted? Is there a difficulty to focus? Or is that something that you see in others as well?
Well, I mean, it's so prevalent. It's more easy to be distracted today than any time in history. You got Facebook and you got notifications on your phone and, you know, every other social media and email and now you can watch movies and TV and all that stuff on your phone and Instagram. The thing is that, you know, people are, and then, you know, worse, you got the Kardashians, you know, and drunken midgets and reality TV. And again, I'm not paying out on anybody, because by the way, the Kardashians, you should acknowledge them that they've learned how to make millions of dollars doing nothing.
Oh, excellent marketers.
God bless excellent. Them, you know, but my point being is that people are using all of that as distraction from paying attention to their lives and the road that it's on, you know, and that most people's lives are on a road to that. There's a bridge out and they're going to crash and burn, but they're trying anything not to do to pay attention to that. But the thing is that, you know, instead of paying attention that your life's going to crash and burn, is why don't you use the steering wheel and change the direction of it? And that's why, yes, we have to learn how to hold our focus longer. So I'm the world record holder for firewalking. I did 81 meters of 600 degree coals in my bare feet. Now I take tens of thousands of people firewalking off of 3, 4, 5 meters of fire, you know. And people ask me, what's the difference? And I go, the only difference is I had to learn how to hold my focus longer. Because it's, you know, even on 3 meters, somebody can get a little hot spot on their foot. And you'll see it happens usually in the last step of the firewalk because people lose their focus. So it's about training ourselves to hold on to our focus longer, because then what you'll achieve is crazy. That's why I don't have notifications on my phone. And I don't want Facebook telling me that people are liking me and looking at my, it's not important to me. I don't really care what people think about me, actually. And when you hold on to your focus, you'll be way more successful in all the areas of your life, because then you can steer it.
Yeah, totally. I guess the challenge, Kirk, is for someone listening to this podcast, they're probably driving their car right now as we're recording this. Typically, we find that the podcast get listened to mostly in the car. And I'm curious, how does one practically go about learning to hold their focus? Because one of the things, actually, I'm reading an interesting book at the moment, and I'm going to apologize to the author because it is just, I've forgotten, I think it's Jason Lehner. And it's 10 reasons why you should delete your social media accounts. And one of the key reasons is exactly what you've spoken about, the disruption to focus. But apart from deleting social media accounts, what is it that you did to learn to focus longer and more intently in a practical sense?
There's more than two shades on the planet. So, you know, totally. Say cancel all your social media accounts. First, social media is a great area, a place to do business.
I agree.
You know, and since all those people are on there losing their focus, I might as well sell stuff to them. I mean, that's what it is. I didn't tell them to get on there, but since they're on there, you know, you can grab people's attention. And what I do, helping people transform their lives, at least I'm selling them something of integrity, and now I know where they are.
Yeah.
But we can turn off all the notifications, you know, and all the notifications from apps and all, you know, just that in itself, an email notification is that, you know, our mobile phone, as an example, an email was actually designed to be a benefit to our lives. And then it became a leash where, you know, you can't even, I know people that can't even go to the bathroom without carrying their phone in there with them. And they can't take a shower with their phone on the sink. So the thing is that just because people call me doesn't mean I have to answer it right away. By the way, when I was a kid, if you called and somebody wasn't home, you just called them back. And then nobody freaked out over that, you know, and nobody expected that you're waiting by the way, the handset weighed about 5 pounds.
You had to walk to the public phone booth to put your coin in to do
exactly.
it as well.
And you had to have change and all that stuff, right? So,
yeah.
And then, you know, the mobile phone now is, people, you know, it's funny. My phone will ring and people go, your phone's ringing. I go, I know. And they go, well, you can answer it? No. Just because people call doesn't mean, that's why I have a message bank. So is to start to dictate a time in your life. And by the way, it's a great thing to schedule it in, is that, hey, at this time I return phone calls and this time I return emails. So you start putting it on your terms. And then the rest of the time is I enjoy, like I have three young kids. I have a beautiful, stunning wife. I'm guessing she's going to be beautiful and stunning at 80 years old, but I want to enjoy her now.
Yeah.
Because being in a helicopter crash, I'm not sure if I get tomorrow. And by the way, when she's 80, I'll be like 207. So I might as well enjoy her now. So my point being is I enjoy life now and I'm very successful. And so the point being is that in that time when I'm working, I work on being very efficient and very effective, which means you got to stay focused. So if I'm working on marketing for my business, that's what I'm working on. I'm not working on handling this and phone calls and complaints or customer service or whatever you think it is. I'm just focused on marketing because if you keep focused, it's amazing what you'll get done. And then scheduled in the calendar would be okay. Now would be is answering emails and I get, you know, just answer them. But again, don't get distracted by Facebook when you're returning your emails. Just handle the emails. And when you do it on your terms, you'll be amazed with how much you get done and how less you're giving the control over to everybody else, which, by the way, people, you know, liking my photo on Facebook, whatever, it's nice. Thank you. But it doesn't really have an impact on my life. And if it's not helping my life grow in some way, I actually don't care.
Yeah, totally. I really concur with that as well. And thinking about my own life, actually, just probably a couple of months ago, I noticed in my own life, that I was becoming more distracted and I was becoming more, I suppose, at the whim of the telephone. And interestingly enough, I did exactly what you did and I've turned off all the notifications and it has been remarkable the amount of attention I've been able to give back to myself without those little beeps and bongs and bings kind of going off every 5 seconds. And it's fantastic. I do want to come back to the introduction that we spoke about, Kirk, and that was when you mentioned the helicopter accident. And now I've got a friend of mine who has been through a similar experience, and I know that in his particular situation that it was a pivotal point in his life, and it sounds like it has been for you as well. Coming back to that journey when you said, you know, the agent was ringing 40 times and essentially called you a scumbag and never would work again. What were the key things that you reflected on after that accident? Clearly there was grief. Clearly there was trauma. Clearly there was obviously a path that you went down. But how did you manage to maintain that awareness of personal growth, self-development while you're going through this grieving process and probably going to a few dark places? And equally, how did you then get yourself out of that space? Because that's a really interesting story.
Sure. You know, Justin, the thing is, now is the time to work on your personal development, you know, and yes, it does, you know, it does give you a better quality of life and it gives you more wonderful things that happen in your life and you achieve more goals. But the other reason for doing personal development is that, you know, life can kick you hard. Yeah. You know, my wife at 32 years old, her husband who was 35, dropped dead up here on the Sunshine Coast in the plaza in a shopping mall with a 3.5-month-old daughter on his chest. Luckily, he rolled because he was a loving father on the way down so he didn't kill his daughter. And then another 3.5-year-old at home, you know, young couple, young family, and died of no reason. And they just had a beautiful walk on the beach. It's not fair. So any day that life's not kicking you, don't look for reasons to kick yourself or get kicked. You know, is do personal development to feel better and look for reasons to feel good. But for those days where, you know, like the helicopter crash, it was, we're on a movie. We're Chuck Norris. It's not supposed to happen. You know, we weren't doing anything crazy. It just happened and it wasn't fair. But for 2.5 years, I took it on the chin, you know, where I felt like I was a failure. I couldn't save my friends. And why this happened to me? And why does God hate me so bad? And but because I had been so into personal development, it was a habit. And so I still, the weird thing is, I still read affirmations every day and I still did my goals. And so that little spark, and when you talk about dark, it was so dark, it didn't seem like there was any light, but there was a little spark that kept me going and luckily kept me from pulling the trigger on the gun I had in my mouth every night. And then one day woke up and just that spark asked a new question, which was, what's great about this? And I know it's a weird question, you know, when you're dark and your first response, your ego wants to say nothing. But, man, if you're expecting an answer, and I said, okay, what's great about the helicopter crash? And first thing was, is at least I had five friends to lose. You know, some people have nobody, you know, and they were great guys. And, well, at least my best friend died in my arms, not in a stranger's arms. You know, at least care given to those people to keep them alive, I can guarantee it was given to them. And every, you know, beyond the call of duty, because not only were I one of those people, but I saw other people as well. You know, Chuck Norris gave blood in twice in one night, which is, you know, you're not supposed to do that. And Aaron Norris, Chuck's brother, who is directing the film, gave blood three times in one night, which, by the way, you can die from. But that's the level that we were all contributing to keep these guys alive and save them. It is what it is. And because of that, and then, by the way, you know, you keep asking what's great about this, that I lived.
Yeah.
Well, you might want to do something with that.
Exactly.
You know, by the way, I also saved two people's lives that day. But you get caught up in your drama. You forget about the good stuff. Yeah. So the question redirects your focus. And that's what we started talking about today, is the power of your focus. And because, you know, a new question changes what you're focusing on. And so all of a sudden I realized, you know, that I'm alive, that I obviously have some purpose I'm supposed to live out. And you might want to start living it, because the critter has a sense of humor. You know, one night the gun might go off and instead of dying, I'm going to shoot my spinal cord out, be in a wheelchair and be the first person to live to 350. So I can really see, you know, what an idiot I am. And by the way, if my friends could come back to life for a minute, they would all say, dude, live, don't waste it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm dead. Don't waste it. And so instead of dishonoring my friends, I decided to honor them. And yeah, it's the most transformational moment of my life. But the funny part is that you always get what you ask for. And it just rarely comes in a package you thought it was supposed to show up in.
Yeah, that's actually really, really interesting. You rarely find that the gifts you ask for come as you expect. I'm curious to understand, correct, the helicopter accident was the biggest decision that you made as a result of that, because it is a choice point, right? You can zig, you can zag, and there's some other things in between, but was the biggest decision that you made to just get on and live your life? Was that the big decision, or is there another big decision in there as well?
Well, the real big decision was I unscrewed a broom pole out of a broom, went in my backyard in California, in L.A., held it over my head like a samurai warrior. And I said, once I step over this line, I'm done. I'm done. Not I'm trying, not I quit. I'm done. And so I literally cut a line in the sand, stepped over it. I gave up cocaine. I gave up cigarettes. I gave up all alcohol abuse. I gave all my guns away, not to just people wandering down the street. I gave them away to gun collector friends of mine. And, you know, because you have to, no matter where you are, by the way, you don't have to be that dark in your life.
No, of course.
You just have to get to the place where you go, I'm done. I'm done. Otherwise, it's like being buried neck deep in dog poo and you've been in so long, you've convinced yourself it doesn't stink. You got to go, look, my life's on the line. My youth is on the line. My dreams are on the line. What am I teaching my kids and everybody else I have around me if I don't go for what, you know, the best quality of life I can possibly get? So, again, your life doesn't have to be in a toilet to make it better. You just have to say, you know what, I'm done with whatever that is. So over the last couple of years, I've given up alcohol completely. Not because there was a problem with it. I just go, you know what, in order to have something new in your life, you got to make room for it. You have to give something up.
Yep.
And I just got my black belt in Aikido, a martial art that I've been studying for 10 years. And, you know, I'm way more focused at Aikido and way more consistent with it, because I don't go, man, I had a busy day at work, let's have a glass of wine on the deck.
Yeah.
And, you know, made room for it. So you got to say, I'm done. And my wife asked me when originally I made that decision, for how long? And I said, no, I just don't drink. And she's like, man, you didn't even tell me about this. Like a couple of weeks you haven't been drinking. I'm like, yeah, it's not a big deal. I'm just done. So it's at any level, the wealth you're creating, if you're in an abusive relationship, you really just got to go, you know what? Love doesn't tolerate. I'm done.
Yeah.
And go find a relationship of your dreams. But you also have to let go of the story that oh God, I was with a partner who abused me for 25 years. Well, they're still abusing you because you keep telling the story.
Yeah.
Just let it go. It's an edited interpretation of the past. It's not even the truth. It's your version of the truth. But also, as you allowed yourself to be in that relationship, you dated that person, whatever, let it go. And then just go, man, you know what? I'm done with my past. I'm now moving towards my future.
Do you think at any point people stay in those relationships or keep pursuing unhealthy habits, whether it's drugs, alcohol, sex, addiction, all those things? Do you think people pursue or keep doing some of the things because in some way it serves them? And so therefore to say, I'm done, that probably for you, it sounds like it was a very click of the fingers, line in the sand, I'm stepping over, done. But for some people, is it as easy as that for everyone? Is that really what it is? It is just that the power of that very profound decision, just done? Is that it?
Well, Jesse, I, for 2.5 years, this went on, drug. I mean, I was pumping 5 grams of cocaine up my nose every night, which, by the way, if you ever watched the movie Blow with Johnny Depp, that's like the way over the line of what your body should even be able to take. So, I mean, I was really out of control. I mean, and depression at a level that I can't even describe. It was so dark. And cigarettes. I tried quitting every day and I crushed them. And then I'd go in a garbage can and tape cigarettes together. It's like ridiculous. But it's our belief that become our behaviors. Our behaviors are shown through actions and our actions produce the result. And so I asked myself, I said, Keurig, what was the difference between, because by the way, I hated cigarettes. I hated my parents smoking. I was always on them about it. And then here I'm that guy, who's doing it. And so I thought, well, what was the difference between when I smoked and when I didn't smoke in my life? And I thought, well, back then I was a non-smoker. See, when you say you quit, well, then you're a quitter. But you still want to smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
And quitters can quit quitting and go back to smoking.
Yeah.
But if you say I'm a non-smoker, well, non-smokers don't smoke. So you can say, but we've been drinking. I don't care. I don't smoke. But I got the British ones. They come in a tin. They're like $10 a cigarette. I don't care. I don't smoke. So as you see, it's a shift in identity. Yeah. When you shift your identity, you change your destiny. And so that's, people are caught in, my parents are this way, so I'm that way. So see, when you hear the words I am, that's declaring your identity. You have to shift that and stop saying I'm a manic depressant. I'm a, rape victim. Start using the I ams proactively towards who you want to become, because all of us achievers in life, we're visionaries. We talk about who we are. So I'll give you a funny story. It's last year, because it just happened this Sunday, the Super Bowl was played in the States.
Yep.
Last year, I was at Sylvester Stallone's house watching it, and I've known Sly since I was 18 years old. And he saw that I was going to be on stage with Arnold Schwarzenegger, so he said, hey, come have lunch with us, and he called Arnold to have lunch with me in L.A. It was just amazing, me sitting there with Sly and Arnold, and I'm pinching myself going, dude, how do you get this life? But,
that's my question too, just saying.
I'm in awe myself that I've gotten to live the life I've gotten to live. And Sly would have me up at his house in the 80s and 90s, for Christmas. And Elton John would be on the piano. And I'm holding the Oscar for Rocky, until Sly took it away from me. But, I was in awe that I'm in, here's this, in those days I was like homeless and living in my car and, and all these things. And people would come up to Sly and go, why do you got Keurig here? He's a loser, man. He's homeless. Or if he's not homeless, he's always close to homeless. Like, Sly, you can't find any better friends than Keurig. And I'd say, I'm right here. I can hear you. And they go, I don't care. You're a loser. And Sly would say, you got no idea who this kid is. Because in his head, he already is a success. That's how he sees himself. And it's just a matter of time that his results will catch up with his mindset. And all of us who's ever achieved anything, that's where we started. It was in our head. We are that person. We say that even though the world around us doesn't represent it, the world in our head does.
Yeah, totally.
And so when I had lunch with Sly, in L.A. last year, and I thanked him and for everything he's done for me. And he said, Keurig, if it wasn't me, you would have found somebody, because in your head, that's who you were. And because we could see that, that's why I was willing to hang out with you and have you around and stuff, because you weren't a detriment. You were an asset. You were just like one of us. And look at your results. Just like I told you back in the day, they caught up with your mindset.
Isn't that fantastic? And I guess for those people listening There's so many threads of gold that I'd just really like to just tap into. The first one, of course, is go back and rewind just a few minutes and re-listen to that, because, again, I really want you to take the message out of this. The first thing is it's about shifting identity, you know, using the I ams really proactively. And, of course, you know, your outside world is a manifestation of your inside world, and so it's got to start internally before it happens externally. And I guess the corollary or the extension of that is to then seek external gratification, thinking it's going to bring you internal pleasure, is candidly the other way around. Yeah, it's I'm trying not to use the word, but I'm going to use it. It's arse about, to use the great Australian saying. And so really the internal world happens first, then the external world. And the third thing I really appreciated in that anecdote there, Kirk, is having someone see that in you as well, because sometimes, you know, we can see it in ourselves, but if other people don't see it, you can take a bit of a hit in confidence. You know, it's good to have someone in your corner, not to use a Rocky pun too overtly, but it is good to have someone in your corner who believes in you and who can see the same things in you that you see in yourself. And finding that network, finding that peer group to hang out with that supports you and encourages you. How important was that in your development, Kirk, to have that kind of support?
Well, I think it's important. You know, if you ever watch, there's a video on YouTube of Arnold Schwarzenegger doing a commencement speech at a university. He says, you know, people think I was a self-made man. There's nothing farther from the truth. Every step of the way, I've had help. So we have to search for a network. But see, sometimes you're going to have to leave other people alone. You know, not doesn't mean you have to dump them and you have to be cruel about it. It's just that, you know, you got to surround yourself with people that move you forward. And first, in the early days, because people say to me, well, I don't have a network like you. Oh, wait a minute. I wasn't born with it either. You know, I mean, I developed it. But in the early days, I did it through books and through studying those people. And if you read Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, written in 1937, he talks about, you know, creating your mastermind group. And some of his were already dead. But he still held counsel with them, you know, where he'd say, Abraham Lincoln, what would you think about this? And he'd ask him questions. Well, because his brain knew how Abraham Lincoln acted in life and how his values were and how he participated, it fields it through those filters and it answers it that way. And so, you know, I've had people, coaching clients as an example, you know, they've asked me a question and they say, hey, Kirk, I've already taken the action. What I did was I asked myself, what would Keurig say here? And then I just called you up to see how close it would be to what you said to what I thought you would say. And I go, how close was it? And they go, verbatim, word for word, man, because they know how I operate. And so once you start doing that, you know, you start reading. And that's why I love reading biographies and autobiographies, because you start to see these people that they're real, that they had problems, how they managed them, what their strategies were, what they said to themselves. And then they become your mastermind group. But then also in getting groups with people that you want to be in and talk to those people. But instead of talking to them as a raving fan, talk to them as a peer.
Yeah, that's
And by
key.
The way, that's the other reason that I've had friends, you know, John Travolta and Sylvester Stallone and different people that I've been able to have friendships with. It's because I hold myself to the standard. I'm a peer. I'm not here to kiss your butt. I do respect who they are and what they've accomplished, but man, Sly, you know, in the early days, you come up and punch me in the arm. I'd punch him back. You know, you ain't just come up and crack on me, you know, and I'm just, oh God, you know, do anything you want. And it ain't going to happen.
No.
But because of that, he respected me back. Now I'm not trying to knock him out and overpower him. It's just guys. We're just, you know, one time we were in the Brisbane airport in the private sector and he punched me and I punched him back. Pretty soon, here's two guys wrestling on a tarmac. You know, and people are looking out the window at Sylvester Stallone in the fight. And it's just us guys. It's like we're friends, you know?
Yeah.
But I always look for gifts in everybody because everybody has a gift. And so instead of thinking I'm superior to everybody else's, what's the gift they're here to give me? You know, and maybe it's to open up my mind or hear what they're successful in. And so take the parts out of people that are useful to you and leave the rest alone. So as an example is, you know, I spent 5 years on the road with Anthony Robbins and, you know, Tony backstage and Tony on stage aren't the same guy. And I'm not, again, being judgmental or panning out on him. He's an amazing man. But there's things that you're going to see. And by the way, I'm not Jesus Christ either. So I'm not trying to shine my coin higher than his. there's things that you can see that you don't like about a person. And then what happens is that people say, I don't want to learn from this person because I don't like the way they do that, whatever that is. Or, you know, Kerry Packer was a bad guy and he was fat and unhealthy. Okay, but you might want to learn how he made so much money, right?
Totally.
Leave the rest behind, but learn his wealth creation strategies. And so it's never about the teaching, the teacher. It's about the teaching. Get out of it what is beneficial for you. If somebody's encouraging you, awesome. If somebody's not, don't hang out with them. But just because people are encouraging, don't just ride on that. Still take action to make your life better. Because to me, it doesn't really matter if somebody's saying great things about you or saying garbage about you. It basically means about the same unless they're helping you move forward. And that's the key. It's always about, you know, people confuse activity with movement. I don't care about the activity. I just want to move forward.
Yeah, a couple of rich threads of conversation in there as well, Kirk. And just picking up on a couple of those, a few things I really appreciate in that as well is going into a mastermind group. And when you meet people, as you did with Sylvester Stallone or Sly, you know, being able to treat someone as a peer, I think is really, really important. You know, I go to lots of mastermind groups and I see, you know, there's some very prominent people in those mastermind groups. And yeah, there's a lot of people fawning over them and, you know, almost, you know, kissing their shoes. And it becomes a very different dynamic. And it's hard to learn in that environment because I think you don't get the best of that person anyway. And so I think, you know, for those people going to the mastermind groups, just as one of the threads to pick up on, really hold your own. And as you say, if in your case, if someone punches you, give them a little punch back. It's great. And because people do respect you for it. The other thing I really wanted to really hone in on was the forward movement and the momentum there. Because again, critical, critical, critical in the sense that we can spend so much time being busy but not productive. And coming back to the power of focus, which we've spoken about a couple of times in our conversation, again, my experience is that we get busy doing stuff that doesn't move the needle. And it's easy to get caught up in that noise. Kirk, a couple of things I wanted to just really hone in on as well. I know that you've got a lot of resources on your website, but one of the particular vlogs really fascinated me quite a lot because I think it's an important one. And that was the concept or the subject of fear. Because the old false evidence appearing real thing, we all hear it, we all understand it, but it does appear pretty real, you know, and it produces a visceral response for some people in certain circumstances. And fear is obviously there to keep us safe. How do we, in your experience, how do we use that fear? How do we acknowledge the fear and move past it and still remain safe in the process? You know, rather than just, you know, throwing our hands up in the air and going, well, hey, let's be all gung-ho and charge in recklessly. How do we use that fear but still get past it?
Well, everything in the universe, you know, has a positive intention attached to it. It's trying to get us to evolve. So, you know, all those discomforting feelings that we have, fear and anxiety and whatever that is, are really nothing more than calls to action. They're trying to get you to do something different or pay attention. So years ago, I used to be a skydiver and I you know, jumped out of a plane over 100 times. And, you know, I definitely had fear. I mean, I even jumped out of John Travolta's DC-3 at midnight over the Mojave Desert on New Year's Eve. You know, when you can't even see the ground. It's pit. There's no lights with 26 other or 25 other jumpers. And, you know, it's definitely terrifying.
Was he one of them?
No. John had sold the plane, but that plane was very instrumental to John. That was the plane that kept flying over his house that as a kid, he says he's going to buy it one day when he learns how to fly. And he bought that plane. That plane was sold to a Swedish family who then it was used as the plane for the Flying Elvises for the movie Honeymoon in Vegas with Sarah Jessica Parker and Nicolas Cage. I still had the emblem on it, but that's John's plane and there's a plaque in it. And when I talked to John, it certainly is his plane.
Yeah.
But it was he had it for years and years and loved that plane. But, you know, I had fear, but what did fear do for me? Well, it didn't stop me from skydiving. What it did was it made me a safe skydiver. I paid attention in ground school. I listened to other guys about, you know, malfunctions they had or equipment or whatever. I mean, it got me to play the game at a different level, but it didn't stop me. And so in life, what I say is don't get rid of your fear. Just learn how to use it differently. So instead of, most people don't fear failure. They fear success. Because if they feared failure more, it would drive them away from the fear to become successful. So me, I'm afraid of my life piddling away and it meant nothing. And when I mean success, I mean in all areas of your life, not just making money, but also is I've been poor. I've lived in my car. I watched my dad work hard his whole life, you know, thinking that life would take care of him, you know, by working hard. But he found out that as you sow, so shall you reap. And all he created was a hard life. And at the end, when he paid his mortgage off and thought retirement would be easy now, he didn't understand the government can still raise taxes and rates and utilities where they were going to take his house from him because he couldn't make any more income now that he's retired. But the bills were getting higher.
Yeah.
So poverty to me sucks. I mean, the root of all evil is not money. Poverty is the root of all evil because it drives people insane to do crazy stuff and to spread pain. So the thing is that fear of being part of the problem instead of being part of the solution and not making the best out of myself and not evolving and not living myself the fullest, that fear drives me to live at a higher level, to love at a higher level. Man, having death slapped in your face like I've had it in my wife, we just live. We want to be happy. We want to be loving. We want to spend time with the kids and we want to grow our business and make an impact on the planet. So it's a holistic expansion. With that fear of that look she saw in her husband's face as he looked at her and he's dying before he even hits the ground, you know, on a beautiful sunny day when there was no warning, there was no, oh God, this is one of those special days. Happy, done, that fast. That fear gets us to live. So we got to use our fear differently and change the position of, but also ask us, what's it telling us to go do? What's the call to action here? And so like if you're feeling guilt, well, that's probably saying that you're not living within the context of your own values. Get back in harmony, right? And then as soon as you do that, that warning light on your dashboard goes out, that feeling. Anxiety is probably telling you, man, you're just overloading and overwhelming yourself. Learn how to meditate. Do some peace. Take some deep breaths. Slow down a little bit. It's trying to tell us through discomfort. So as an example, if you hit your thumb with a hammer, the more times you hit it, you'll notice each additional hit hurts worse than the first one because it's trying to tell you, don't go this direction. You're not going to have a thumb left. You're going to smash the bone where you're going to have to amputate your finger. So the expansion of the pain is just a louder signal going, no, you're definitely going the wrong direction. Turn around. But see, we understand that like the hammer scenario, with the emotional one, we think there's something wrong with us. It's not. Your system's working perfectly. You just got to understand the communication, which is trying to tell you to go do something else. Or not, by the way, fear doesn't mean don't go for your goal. It means maybe pay attention or get some education or get some help. Whatever that is, but it's trying to wake you up to get yourself to evolve.
Yeah, totally. Kirk, you've been incredibly generous with your time today, and I'm very, very grateful. I do have just two or three little questions I'd love to ask you, sure. Because you've lived a rich and full life.
Yeah, I have.
And obviously, you've had a background in TV and movies. You've met some wonderful and fascinating people, and you continue to meet wonderful and fascinating people in the work that you do now in terms of, you know, personal growth and development, business advisory, and so on. I'm curious, as you've observed human nature across a variety of different spectra, what's the most interesting thing you've observed about human beings, you know, in your life? What are the things you kind of go, wow, that's really fascinating, or that's really kind of interested me? What is it that you've observed?
Well, a couple of small things really fast is that, you know, I've been all over the world, including Kuwait and, you know, all through Asia and America and the rest of those things, is that some levels we're all the same. You know, we want all the same stuff. We want love. We want our kids to grow up to have better life than we had. And there's always some kind of backyard ceremony like barbecue, hungi, something, you know, that the culture has, food, you know, it involves food. Basically, we're all the same. And what makes us different, our culture, because no baby is born Australian or born German or Jewish or Christian or Muslim or whatever. we get cultured. So if you raise an African baby in Australia, you know, he's going to say, "G'day, mate." And if you raise an Australian baby in Africa, he's doombody, waddy, what? I don't know what they say in Africa, but you know, it's just, we get cultured. And so it's the culture part that I think makes us fascinating because it's not boring. But the other part is that, you know, just because we're all on the same planet, and we're all human and we're all born pure, doesn't mean we're all on the same plane of existence, which means there's some people who actually enjoy being in pain. There's some people who don't want to be successful. There's some people who want to make the most out of themselves, whatever. There's some people who want to be famous. Sly, he loves being a movie star, you know, but he's also a great dad. He's very loving to his daughters, and it really came out of his son Sage died of a heart attack at 35 years old, and Sly wasn't much of a dad to his son, you know, because he was busy being a movie star. Well, guess what? That pain woke him up, and now that he has three beautiful daughters, man, he takes them to soccer, and, you know, he's dad. And to them, they think, "Dad, when are you going to do a different character than the boxer? What, you know their characters? What kind of, you know?" They think he's dad. They just level him. You know, your kids will bring you down to earth real quick. So, you know, the thing is, instead of worrying about whatever people are doing and if it was this easy, why isn't everybody else doing it? Is instead of getting all that, is just make your life a success, because it's the only way you're going to ever help the planet is make the best out of yourself. Because you'll show other people that it's possible. You give them permission to do it. And you can also show them the way. But that's why we just got to let go of what everybody else is doing, because not everybody else is on the same plane of existence.
I really, really appreciate that. And I think, again, there's some wonderful insights and lessons to be had from that. And of course, everyone's definition of success is going to be varied. And it's about running your own race and finding what, you know, success really means to you. And in my own life, I've found that if I've ever tried to tap into someone else's version of success, I very quickly realize it's not my version and I need to get back onto my own path. And I think there's probably quite a few people who get caught up in that as well, seeing what success in inverted commas is. If I could do air quotes around that for the audio, I would. But success is a very personal thing, and I think understanding what your own definition of that is going to be key. And it's just a little thing that I've observed, that sometimes we lose track because we're trying to fit someone else's shoes. Creek, you've been incredibly generous, as I said, with your time and your knowledge and your insights. I know that on your website you've got a free 10-day course there, which I would really love our listeners to go and take, because I think it's going to really help them get on the right path, find their own definition of success and so on. Could you walk us through a little bit about what that course covers and what's involved?
Yeah, sure, Jesse. It's called, thanks for asking. It's called Get Out of Your Bad Mood. And I always get laughter when people hear that. It's just any mood that doesn't support your happiness and your success is deemed as a bad mood, because if it's not helping you, it's hurting you. And so the key distinction between successful people and average people is that we learn how to manage how we think and feel differently than the masses do, and even how we used to ourselves, because we all go through the same stuff. Everybody has depression and everybody has trauma and everybody's got to go through financial issues. We just learn how to manage it differently to produce different results. And so if you read the comments from people doing the course, and it's completely free, there's nothing being sold. It's the best comments I've ever read. People are like, "I can't believe you're giving this thing away." You know, it's because money doesn't inspire me. That's not what drives me. And my life is about adding value. And I love the course, and I love reading the comments for people. And if you write comments, you'll see that I actually write back. And so, you know, get on. But guess what? The course has no value to it and will do no benefit to your life unless you do the course. Action creates results, not knowledge. And the world's full of educated derelicts. Most people know what to do. They're just not doing it. It's in doing we develop and do the course. And like I said, it's not a sale program. It's a real online course. It's small videos. You do them over the course of 10 days. It's not a big workload. If you don't do it, I'm still going to have a great life, because I refuse to surrender my happiness for people who aren't going to take the action.
Well, I think there's a little bit of wisdom in that little comment too, mate. And I think all the dentists listening to this show will appreciate that comment very much indeed about making sure we're not surrendering our own happiness for others. And I think key. Again, ladies and gents, if you've been listening to our show, I would really encourage you to head across to CurricAshley.com. Check out that course. Not just check it out, do the course, as Curric said, because it will change your life. And it is doing it that is going to make the difference rather than just participating. It's about getting it done. Curric, I want to say thank you on a personal level for the work you do, because I have followed your work now for some time. And I know the work that you do comes from the heart. And I know that the work you do really is designed to help others improve their own lives. And I think long may that continue, my friend. I really appreciate the work that you do for making the world a better place. And I salute you and I applaud you. And I'd love to catch up with you again sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jesse. You're an awesome guy. And like you said, we almost crossed paths up on a coast there yesterday. Is definitely come on up and come to the farm and let us know and have a barbecue. And love to meet you in person, give you a hug.
That'd be lovely, mate. I look forward to it. And I'll be up there shortly, so I'm going to hit you up for that, and we'll definitely do that. But again, from all of us here, thank you so much for taking the time, mate. You're an absolute scholar and a gentleman. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.